Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the VC. It is Saturday, the 7th of November, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And, here's the problem, yes. And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I am doing, Steve, of course, is doing the YouTube channel. He'll be up in a moment. I'm nodding my head vigorously in the corner there.
The audio is working.
The audio is working. And that's really what counts. He'll have the video up in a moment, I am sure. I'm on Periscope. Nobody's paying attention to me, but I'm on Periscope. The problem is I forgot my my tablet, so I'm doing it off my phone, which is hanging slightly askew. And the only place I can put it where it'll stand up by itself, because I don't have a stand for it, is hanging over my laptop, and it's covering my clock. So,
put another little timer up in the other corner.
Yeah, I'll have to do that, but I didn't do it yet, so it isn't done. Oh, and of course, today, November 7th, is Doc Savage's birthday. Doc Savage was a pulp hero from the 30s.
Going to be played by Benedict Cumberbatch, isn't he? In the new movie?
No.
Isn't he playing everybody?
He plays everybody. He plays everybody Jeremy Renner doesn't. If you need an American, you give it to Jeremy Renner. If you need an Englishman, you give it to Benedict Cumberbatch. There was a Doc Savage movie with Ron Ely, who had played Tarzan. The first half of it was amazingly good, and the second half of it was an utter crap fest.
That's how you really feel.
Yeah. And of course, Doc Savage, his first name was Clark. He was a superhuman guy. He had a fortress of solitude in the Arctic. And his books came out about a year before Superman debuted. So the question is, who stole from who?
Yeah.
All right. And let me apologize. The website is still not completely up. Enom is apparently having a little trouble letting go. So I'm not sure what to do next, but we'll have the site moved as soon as possible. In the meantime, news of the day. Microsoft is planning to make sure PC makers only install Windows 10 on new machines next year. On October 31st, 2016, OEMs like Dell, HP, and Lenovo will all have to stop shipping new PCs with Windows 7 or 8.1 pre-installed. Instead, Microsoft wants all new machines to ship with Windows 10 only. This is a little sooner than usual, as Microsoft normally sets an end of sales date for older versions of Windows 2 years after the launch of a new version. Microsoft extended that policy during the Windows 8 era to allow PC makers to continue to pre-install Windows 7. HP used the extension as a marketing effort to bring Windows 7 PCs back by popular demand. At the time, beg your pardon. At the time, the software maker said it would give OEMs a year's notice, and it's clear that Microsoft feels confident enough with Windows 10 to push PC makers to pre-install it next year. It comes alongside Microsoft's moves to automatically download the Windows 10 install files to Windows 7 and 8 machines next year. Customers will still have a choice to upgrade, but Microsoft is being a lot more aggressive in its approach to reach 1 billion devices running Windows 10. So, they're still having problems with the site, so there's no poll this week. Have you been purposely holding off getting Windows 10? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. It's a real conundrum for people. People are afraid, and rightly so, because yeah. Windows 8 was crap.
But big time.
They don't want to move from 7. What I'm seeing, at least, is that Windows 8 people are happy to move to 10.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And they
get back
so
to their
soon as possible.
Original Windows.
Right. But Windows 7 people don't want to move.
Oh, heck no. And why?
Right.
There are no big new features in Windows 10 than there were in Windows 8 that aren't already in Windows 7.
Right.
Because Windows 7, you know, was great, and all they did was turn around and make Windows 8, they converted Windows 7 into a tablet version of 8.
Yep.
I mean, nothing else had changed. They just mucked it up that much more, and there's really no great incentive to move some. They're almost getting to the point, like the Mac folks. It's just, oh, another operating system. Yeah, does this, does that.
Like
word processors. Yeah, they do this, they do that. All the whiz-bang things that, you know, they've run their time, they've run the gauntlet of time.
Yep.
As far as features and oohs and ahs and wows and I need this and I need that. It's just, yeah, they're there.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Microsoft has said that this is the last, you know, like numbered version of Windows, which is just going to be Windows. And a lot of people have been saying that on the Mac side, that, you know, you don't really need this giant release. Just, you know, push out features as they come available.
Right. Fixes and features, just add them.
And more fixes than features.
Right. The only reason you do a version upgrade for an operating system is when you've had enough changes that you really need to differentiate it internally. You know, these drivers don't work with X, they only work with Y, version Y. So,
yeah.
But that hasn't happened in years for any operating system.
Mm-mm.
So it's a problem that they've all got. Microsoft also has that problem that I've talked about for decades. When you already own 90% of the market, how do you grow? Well, you don't. But what you do is you mandate all new machines have the product on them, and that by moving to a subscription model, they're guaranteed X dollars a year.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Instead of buying Windows 7 5 years ago and keeping it until the machine dies and then buying another Windows 7 machine or moving your operating system over, now it's you get it with Windows 10 and it's a subscription. It's mm-hmm. built in. You're paying X dollars a year, whatever that number
is
going to be.
It is what it is. You can go with it.
And if you don't like it, buy a Mac or buy Linux. You know, use Linux.
Or use a Chromebook.
Or use a Chromebook.
I mean, with more and more stuff going on to the cloud.
Right. Well, the problem, and that's a separate issue for Microsoft, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft has built their entire empire.
Google is putting a big hurt.
Yeah, it really is. Because Microsoft has built their entire empire on that box on the desk. Whether it's a laptop or a desktop,
yeah.
It's a box on a desk. And everything happens in the box on the desk. Google comes along and says, you don't need a desk. You don't even need a box.
Yeah.
You know? You want to look at your documents in your phone? Not a problem. You want to look at them in your tablet? Not a problem.
Or if you're across the country and somebody else's computer,
yep.
You log in?
Not a problem.
You're there.
Yep. And Microsoft is trying to figure out how to fight that. And they're just not having a lot of good luck at it.
And that ain't going to happen.
But where they win is people are afraid.
Yeah.
People are afraid, you know, and
you're right.
There's a contingent who will say that people are just lazy. That's part of it, I suppose, but people are afraid to try a new thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm too stupid to learn another thing.
They've gotten...
No, you're not. You learned this.
Well, one of the big things I hear all the time is I didn't know there was a new thing.
Right.
So then when Windows starts pushing the Windows 10 icon to everyone, everyone's mad about this new icon showing up. I don't want Windows 10. Well, at least you know. And the same thing on the Mac side. The El Capitan thing keeps popping up all the time. Well, okay, now at least you know. You can't say you didn't know.
And the thing that is, though, I think folks are getting very complacent. And, you know, it could do all this, and then, you know, everything out 16 ways from Sunday. But they only do certain little things. And as long as it still does those little few little things, they're happy.
Right.
They don't need to know anything else.
Right. And of course, we have the other issue of we've spent so many years preaching faster, bigger, better, muscular, powerful, that when somebody says, well, a Chromebook only has a Celeron in it or an Atom processor or whatever, people go nuts. I can't have that. That's not faster, good enough, or better for me. And it's like, I get it. What you want is a, you know, 450 horsepower Hemi dual overhead, blah, 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 blah. But all you ever do
but
is
only
go
costs $100 and gets 1,000 miles to the gallon.
Right. Right. But all you ever do is go to the store and buy milk. You could buy a
but
smart car.
I can get
car.
There really fast.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. You could do that in a smart car and still get exactly the same experience of going to the store.
Or drone delivery.
Or get drone delivery. Exactly.
Yeah, it drops it like you did your soda.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Jack from Ontario, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's up?
How are you doing, gentlemen?
We're doing great. How are you?
I'm okay. I got a problem. It's an ongoing situation. Is that I have the Adobe Flash plugin has crashed again. It happens all the time. Is there a fix for it? What do I do? Or,
yeah, you know, get rid of it.
You uninstall Adobe Flash is what you do.
Never use it again.
Here's the deal with Adobe Flash.
It's junk.
How do I put this politely?
It's junk.
It's junk. Adobe used to be the way that people did things when you did a video on the web or played games or whatever it is. Everybody's moving away from that, and the reason they're moving away from it is Flash is horribly, horribly unsecure. Half the vectors that give you malware come through Flash. And Adobe seems completely incapable of fixing it.
Well, they fix it, and then next week another one is found. And then next week, so what was that hacking team that got hacked? The irony there.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of zero-day exploits were found, most of them in Flash. Because we sort of thought of that over the years. As soon as Adobe releases a fix, like within 2 days, there's a new exploit.
Right.
They have a list of exploits they're waiting for.
Right.
Until Adobe fixes the last one, then we'll use the next one.
Right.
So that's why it gets updated so frequently. And that might be the shorter answer to your question, is uninstall it, download the newest version, and install it.
I've done that, and then it goes does it again.
You're getting the full uninstaller from
sort of like you know, say I'm on a something, and all of a sudden like it's buffering, and it goes on for about a minute, and all of a sudden, boom, it's gone, crashed. Is there another one? Do you have to have that? I mean, is it necessary for your computer?
What is your browser?
The what? My browser?
Yeah,
it's Mozilla.
Yeah. Let me suggest one of two things. One is, unless there's stuff you really need to use Flash for.
And that list is diminishing over time because most websites are switching to newer formats.
Mostly HTML5. But if there's something you really need Flash for, you're just going to have to learn to live with it. If you don't need Flash for things, if what you're seeing is ads mostly through Flash, then just uninstall Flash.
Yeah. And if you want, you could switch to Chrome, which has Flash built in, and Google keeps it updated, so you don't have to worry about updating it.
Well, then if I go to Chrome, then I could, and I think I do have Chrome, but I never use it. You know, I mean, so it'll work then. I mean, you know, without, and I get rid of the Adobe.
Right. You uninstall Flash from your system and let Chrome handle Flash built inside of itself.
Right. What'll happen is when you see Flash things, you'll see a little puzzle piece. And if you right click, you can say run this. So if it's an ad, you can just ignore it. But if it's like a game you really need to play or whatever, then you can run it.
And in many cases, when the website sees you don't have Flash, it will just automatically use H.264, the newer video format.
Okay. Well, actually, I use it for... Just one thing is, actually, it's on the horse racing, they have a live video, and all of a sudden, you're watching the race, all of a sudden, boom, it's gone. You know what I mean?
Well, so, if I were you, I would try that site at least in Chrome.
Okay.
And like I said, it'll show up a blank screen with a little puzzle piece. If you right-click on it and from the drop-down select run, it'll run.
Okay, I can work that out. I got just one more quick thing.
Sure.
Nick? My mini drone keeps on crashing.
Okay. Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I don't know a lot about drones.
Chanters, yeah, what are you talking about? I was at the public market, and I got a cup of coffee.
Yeah, Chanters I can talk about all day, and bags I can talk about all day.
Yeah, okay.
Drones, not so much.
You know what? A mini drone? Why would you get a mini drone? How come you didn't get a big one?
Because
it's cheaper.
There's an answer that I can't say in the air. All right, okay. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. It's sometime afternoon, 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Edmund.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And somebody can tell me if this is too much Nick on the Periscope channel. I put the...
There you go.
I put my phone, I propped it up on the mic. Now, of course, I can't touch the mic because it'll fall down.
We could tape it. I got a Velcro strip.
There's an idea. But this is, that's an idea, actually. We'll play with it at the next
break.
Yeah,
we'll play at next break.
Oh, I had a, here we go. We were talking about Microsoft not getting cloud.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love this story.
Scrooge McDuck is now in charge of Microsoft's consumer cloud division. That's not true, of course, but how could you not know who Scrooge McDuck is? Okay, that's not true, of course, but a surprise announcement from the division responsible for the consumer OneDrive service could easily have been written by Mr. McDuck. The new rule rolls back a signature feature of the OneDrive service and reneges on an extravagant promise that the company made just over a year ago. Last October, with a great deal of fanfare, Microsoft announced that its Office 365 subscribers would all be upgraded to unlimited OneDrive storage plans. At the time, in a post on the OneDrive blog, Chris Jones, vice president of the division responsible for OneDrive, was definitive in his announcement.
Today, storage limits become a thing of the past with Office 365. Moving forward, all Office 365 customers will get unlimited OneDrive storage at no additional cost. We've started rolling this out today to Office 365 home, personal, and university customers. The rollout will continue over the coming months.
In a terse announcement on Tuesday, Microsoft said it plans to renege on their promise. In fact, the company is scaling back its free storage across the board. Microsoft blames a few greedy storage users for the change of heart.
A small number of users backed up numerous PCs and stored entire movie collections and DVR recordings. In some instances, this exceeded 75 terabytes per user, or 14,000 times the average.
That shouldn't be surprising. If you advertise unlimited cloud storage, perhaps you could expect that some people will take you at your word and move large collections to the storage space you so generously offered. Did no one consider the possibility that some customers with large digital media collections would find this offer insanely attractive? Apparently not. Or at least no one with access to an Excel spreadsheet was able to calculate the cost from those heavy users. The owners of all-you-can-eat buffets could easily have told them what was in store. A terabyte is indeed a lot of space, and most Office 365 subscribers will never come close to that limit. But anyone who has a OneDrive collection larger than the 1 terabyte limit needs to begin making other plans. This is the same problem Verizon ran up against when they said unlimited data and people started using unlimited data.
No, we didn't really mean that.
Yeah.
Right. How much data should unlimited mean? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
That's always those couple of people that ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of people are using 75 terabytes. Big deal.
I know. Think about it. 75 terabytes, so what?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like...
Because, you know, 99% of the other people are probably using, you know, 10 megs.
Right.
Yeah.
So, all told, that's probably 1/100,000th of 1%. Of the amount of storage Microsoft has, and they're upset about it?
Yeah.
That's just picayune. The same problem I have
with
Verizon.
Build a bridge, get over it.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon.
It is.
Yes, it is. Going back to your Windows 10 question.
Yes.
My question is if I do the upgrade and I do happen to be one of those people that it doesn't install correctly, how many hoops do I have to jump through to get my old operating system back?
Well, it's fairly easy. Erase your hard drive and restore from backup.
Okay, so I have a system where it's on the partition, and I did do a DVD backup of the files. So I would be able to do a system restore from those.
Well, hold on.
Not a system restore.
Well,
a restore from backup.
A restore from backup,
so you have
or actually formatting and reloading.
Right. Now, so back up your entire C partition.
Right. Well, and back up all your partitions. Because when you reformat the drive, you will lose the other partitions as well.
Well, I back up everything. I back up my documents,
good.
My files.
Make sure you've done that.
Pictures, music, all that's backed up daily.
Right. Make sure that's a good backup.
Yeah.
Before
you
do anything.
And then I have the backup of the partition of the operating system.
Yeah. Make sure those are all good backups before you do anything. Because after you've tried to do a reinstall and find that the backup is bad, that's a bad time.
Right. Right.
So this goes in general for anyone looking to do something major to their computer, their phone, their tablet. Before you load the new OS, make sure you have a good working backup, just in case something goes wrong, and then you can back out and go back to what it was before.
Right.
Now, how do I know, other than when I created the DVDs of the partition of the operating system, and it said they were good backups, do I have to worry about that?
Well, do you, can you, depending on what kind of backup it is it compressed in any way, or can you restore a single file?
It was whatever gateway put on that computer for making backups of the partition of the operating system.
If you, I don't know what to tell you.
You know, they say,
put the disk back in and see if you can read a file.
I'm sorry, what was that?
And put one of the disks back in and see if you can read a file.
Okay. Well, it depends on whether it's a compressed file.
Yeah, and that will tell. If you can't read any of the files, then it's compressed proprietary format.
I don't think I can read the files. I think it's in whatever they use to make their backups.
Here's the second problem. Whatever program that was that Gateway used, that's going to disappear when you reformat too. So how are you going to restore everything?
Right.
So typically,
I'm asking you. Yeah. I don't know.
Typically, what you do is you use a real backup program that you can boot from, and then it can back up all of your partitions, all your volumes, and it's usually easiest to back up to a hard drive, so you don't have to keep swapping even DVDs in and out. Could take hundreds of DVDs to back up an entire computer.
Right. I've got multiple. I got backups of backups.
Yep.
At this point, if I can't restore from the DVDs,
right,
can I copy that partition on the computer to a separate hard drive?
Yes, with a real backup program or cloning program. CloneZilla is another one that will do an exact clone.
See, you have to worry entirely about, I don't know what this program is that Dell gave you.
Yeah.
So without knowing that, I can't guarantee that any of the things you backed up will be restorable, particularly since you'll lose that program when you do the format.
That's what I was worried about.
So I would be very, very careful what I did for that.
Okay, yeah. So basically use a true backup program and back up that partition, so at least I have that.
Right. And in many cases, once you have a clone of your boot partition, you can boot from that. And and continue to work. So, you know, sort of a previous step is don't do an upgrade in the middle of some critical job.
Yeah.
But having a bootable cloned backup allows you to then, if your hard drive dies, you can boot from your external drive and get back to work until you have time to rebuild the internal.
Okay. All right. Yeah, this is why I haven't done the backup. I mean, I haven't done the upgrade.
Right.
I don't want to be one of those people that ends up with a nightmare scenario.
And most people don't have any problems.
Yeah.
But there's always someone that will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, I would suggest that you first make sure you've got a really, really, really good backup.
Mm-hmm.
And several, just to be safe, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Because any medium that you back it up to could have an issue.
Well, like I say, but if it's documents, pictures, and all that stuff, just throw it up to the cloud.
Yeah. Right, but as far as the partition holding his operating system...
Yeah, I'm not worried about the documents, pictures, music, all that stuff. I have, like I said, I've got multiple backups of those.
There you go.
Like I said, and I do it daily, so...
Mm-hmm.
And then I have one that I only put on the system once a month that I do a once-a-month backup on.
Good.
I have something that's not in the system. So that I'm not worried about. What I am worried about is being able to get 7 back if 10 flubs up.
Well, theoretically, if 10 flubs up, one of the choices is to go back to 7. But again, depends on how it screws up.
Right, right.
Now, is this, I didn't hear, is this a laptop?
No, it's a desktop.
Okay, because...
And one of the options is to put another hard drive in and install 10 on it.
Yeah.
And then
hard drives are cheap enough. Okay. And on boot, you can always switch back and forth.
So it will allow me to do it on a separate hard drive if I do the upgrade?
Well, yes and no. Here's what will happen. You have to have a legitimate number from Microsoft, the ID, the
product key
mm-hmm. from Microsoft. So you could use your Windows 7 product key, but then Windows 7 will be toast.
Mm-hmm.
So what, or you, of course you can buy one from Microsoft, but then what's the point of trying the free upgrade?
Right, exactly.
So you can...
Well, new hard drive, clone your drive, and then upgrade if it doesn't work.
That's true.
It should back you down. If it does work, then you've got that clone anyway. Just to be safe.
That's true. If you clone the drive, then you can always put the other drive back in.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Makes sense.
It's not the cheapest route to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, but it's not that much more expensive. Right.
No.
Right.
And then, so what? You got an extra drive thereafter for backing up stuff.
Right. You could buy an external enclosure. You could put it internally. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
It's a win-win all the way around.
There you go.
Okay, well, there's an idea. And the other thing I wanted, if I have 1 second.
Sure.
Back quite a long time ago, I remember Dave complaining about his tablet updating to Android Lollipop and turning the thing into a brick, basically. And I have a Nexus, the 2012 Nexus, Google Nexus 7, that upgraded last year to Lollipop and was horrible. Basically wanted to throw the thing against the wall.
Yep.
And then the other day last week I decided, you know what, I'm gonna factory reset it. And I factory reset it, not realizing that it was going to back up everything that was on there when I threw Google.
Mm-hmm.
So after I did that, I factory reset it again and told it to start as a new tablet.
Mm-hmm.
And after I did that, even though it was still Lollipop, it is 100% better than it was.
Huh.
Nice.
I'll give it a shot because I've got nothing to lose. I mean, like you say, right now it sits there like a brick.
Yeah, and I did it, and I said, you know, what have I got to lose? I can't use it the way it is.
Yeah.
And I factory reset it as a new tablet and loaded, you know, my essential apps on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, other than it does hang up with some internet surfing, and that's no matter what browser I use.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's running, like I said, 100% better than it was.
Oh, okay.
And would I love to go back to KitKat? Sure. But that's not going to be an easy thing to do.
Yeah, right? No.
But I did get one word of hope that even though this does keep updating to the next version of Android, the 2012 is going to be exempt from the Marshmallow update, which I was very happy about.
No, nice.
That's one good thing that it's like, oh, great, no more updates that I have to worry about having a brick to deal with.
So cool.
I wasn't upset to hear that it wasn't going to update the Lollipop. Only the 2013 version of the Nexus 7 is going to get it. So.
No, I'll have to give that a shot. Thank you.
So I'm very happy with that also.
Oh, good for you.
So I just wanted to let you know that it worked for me. The backup, the restore, you know, to a new tablet worked.
Oh,
so.
Cool.
Good tip. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. That's the thing I really love is our...
Yeah, I mean, like I say, I wound up getting another tablet when I upgraded my phone to the Samsung 5.
Yeah.
They threw in a tablet for $15.
You can't beat that.
Yeah, I'll take it. So I took the tablet, and, you know, it's a nice size tablet. I love, especially reading on it. I love, you know, reading my books and that. And it's handy. And the Nexus is just sitting there because, like I say, it got so... annoying trying to do anything on it. It just kept locking up or taking forever to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And I seem to be having some problems with the Periscope. Not sure what that's about. It seems to have locked. No, I don't. This is okay. It still seems to be broadcasting. I don't know quite what you were seeing there. While it was locked, but it was apparently broadcasting, so there you go. Also, I want to say we went to the... we'll figure that out in a minute. We went to the movies the other day and saw The Importance of Being Earnest, which is terrific.
Ooh.
It was just terrific. It was a Fathom Events thing. And we went afterwards. Some guy was walking up the aisle. He stopped. He shook my hand. He said, "I'm Steve from Greece." So I loved it. I love it when that happened. Shout out to Steve from Greece. Now back to the phones. Our next caller is Roy from Pittsford, New York.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
No.
Who walked in?
I had somebody ask a question of me, and I don't know the answer to it, so I thought I'd phone in. He's got Windows 10 on a laptop with a solid-state hard drive, and he read a comment on the web that said to make sure that he never fills the solid-state hard drive more than half full. And they explained that the reason is that because of the way a solid-state hard drive works, that they have to take the data off, clear the drive, and then reinstall the data. I had never read about this. Can you comment on that at all?
Yes, the information your friend got is partially correct. You get about 5,000 writes from a 5,000 or 50,000 writes from a an SSD drive. They last about the same 5 years that a hard drive does, which is just really weird. Sort of a synchronicity thing. But
you'd think because there's no moving parts, it would last longer.
Yeah, no.
But the process of writing to an SSD physically damages the cell.
Right. And that's the part that your friend heard about. When a cell becomes, there's all kinds of circuitry in the SSD card that figures out what's going on with the drive itself. And if it feels that a specific cell is too damaged, then it has to take the data from that cell and put it in another cell, thus losing that cell and thus making the drive slightly smaller.
Yep.
Now, there's a whole bunch of cells that are set aside. When you buy a 1 terabyte drive, there's about a 10% overage that's just set aside specifically for this purpose.
And some of the companies will advertise that as a 980 gigabyte drive.
Right.
Even though it, you know, it's really a terabyte, but there's all this slack to let you, you know, grow into these defects that are inherent in the SSD technology.
Right.
But so 50% is not quite accurate, and the drive handles it itself. It generally gives you about a 10% slack. So you say you buy a 500 gigabyte drive. If you did a properties on it, it probably only says 480 or 470 because it has that slack built into it. So there may be 512, you know, gigabytes of data physically in the drive, but the drive is telling the OS, yeah, I'm only 480, and I'm going to handle, you know, dealing with the rest of it.
Well, apparently what it says here is that because of the way the solid-state drive works, you can't really overwrite data. You have to move the data out and zero the cell or zero the sectors or what have you.
Right, and then move it back.
And then move it back, right. So that's why they say don't use more than half. I don't know. That would imply that you got to move the whole block of data off the drive and then do something and then move it back.
If the drive gets old enough, what will happen is you'll have to say to the drive, okay, we're going to reformat you, and you'll end up smaller. So if you fill the drive, where are you going to put those extra data?
Right.
Right.
Well, you're reformatting, you got to put it someplace, right?
Right.
So that's why he's saying that. That's unusual to do that. Is that something that's recommended?
I've not heard it recommended in general. No, I have not.
I haven't either. That's why I was calling to see if you'd heard about that, because I'd never heard about it at all.
Right, right, right.
I'll tell them to ignore it.
Just use the drive, be happy. It shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, now, a quick comment on that guy that called in before about putting Windows 7 back on his machine.
Yeah.
It seems to me also that I read somewhere that if you install the Windows 10 or if you update to Windows 10, that if you go back into the restore in Windows 10, there's a segment that tells you to go back to 7.
Right.
And you have about a month to do that if you don't like 10. But what he was talking about was what happens if it completely doesn't work at all and I end up bricking my machine.
And that has happened. I've had a number of folks call that Windows 10 got, I'd say, anywhere from 3/4 to 90%. In 75% to say 90% in, and then the uninstall wasn't there to go back to 7.
It just stopped working altogether. Yeah,
well, it worked, but you couldn't go back, and it was sort of working.
I see.
Yeah, because again, it's a new operating system, and some of the hardware out there, it's not fully compatible with all of them.
Well, yeah, every week I read about changes coming out.
And then the other big issue is also the software. That's why we've been telling folks, you know, we've got a year before you got to do anything with Windows 10. Take the time to do your homework and check out that any of the software that you currently have is going to work with Windows 10. And that's just like as simple as say you're using Quicken. Go to the Quicken website and verify that your version of Quicken is going to work with Windows 10.
Right.
And if you have a name brand PC, you know, Dell, HP, Compaq, whatever, you can often go to their website to get a compatibility issue on your hardware. If you've got a custom-built PC that's a little trickier, then you have to go to the manufacturer of each piece, the motherboard, the video card, the Ethernet, etc., to get compatibility issues. But sort of in general, if your computer is not more than a couple, 3 years old, it's probably going to be compatible.
Mm-hmm.
The older it is, the more compatibility issues you're going to run into, typically.
Also, you really want a minimum of 4 gig of RAM. 8 is better.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm all set there, but I got 7, and I'm in no hurry to move on.
Yeah,
there you go. Same here.
You'll be moved on, but there's nothing you can really do about that.
Yeah,
that's what I hear. I got the little window down in my taskbar, and I don't... I think they keep slipping things in because all of a sudden there was some sort of updates that came into place and my screen seemed to change. The contrast feature on the screen seemed to change and the taskbar looks a little different now. It's more grayish instead of bluish. I don't know whether that had anything to do with an update or what.
Yeah, it did. There was a whole series. There was an update that killed a whole series of video cards. And at the same time, changed the settings on another bunch of video cards.
Well, that's what happened. It happened on the, let's see, I'm looking at my log. Looks like on about the 27th of October.
Yep.
Well, like I said, I'm half right. Tempted to, you know, disconnect my Windows 7 machine from the internet and just get a Chromebook.
That'll do it.
And just use my, because my Windows 7 machine, technically, I, you know, use these programs. They work fine. They're older versions. I don't need any more updates to Windows or anything else. It's not going to do anything for these programs. You know, my Quicken and everything else. And they work great. And I'm quite happy. Anything new, I could easily do on a Chromebook.
Yeah, well, that's fine if you have a couple machines. But
well, the Chromebooks.
So
yeah, but the Chromebooks aren't that expensive.
And all kinds of stuff.
I'm sorry, I stepped on you, but Chromebooks are not that very expensive.
Well, I suppose.
And we're seeing a lot of people using them as a second machine. If you're ever fighting your spouse to use the computer, then it's sometimes nice to have a second
mm-hmm.
machine.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's it for me, I guess.
All right,
take care. Thanks.
Thanks for your help.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, I use my Chromebook for an awful lot of stuff, and I'm a power user, and I don't have any trouble with it.
And like I say, for the little bit that I use my 7 Box, there's no reason to go, you know, change it.
That's right.
I mean, any of the updates or anything else, if I disconnect it from the internet, I'm not going to get viruses. I'm not going to get any Trojans or anything else. It just runs the operating system and those programs that I've got, which are very working fine, thank you.
Yep.
Anything else, I'd just put on the Chromebook. And that'll work fine. And, oh, that operating system doesn't get attacked as much.
Well, or at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find that the Chromebook updates every couple weeks, but the updates are mostly fixes or enhancements. They don't charge you for any of them. They all happen in the background, so all you have to do is shut down, and next time you start up, you get the new operating system. I don't know that it could possibly be
any easier. Yeah, really.
You can certainly force an upgrade. You can certainly restart the minute you see that little emblem in the corner, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm, not yet.
Keep using your machine all day. Next time you start up, it takes an extra second or two as it reverts to the new moves to the new operating system. Yeah. And other than that, it's identical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real easy to do. But like I said, I understand people get comfortable with the operating system they were forced to learn once.
And
they feel that they can't or don't want to be bothered learning something new. And yet, then they complain about the old thing all the time. Well, you know what? There's a fix for that. You're just not willing to do that fix. I can't help you with that.
And
if you just want to complain, I'll be happy to complain with you. But
and that's sort of how we're hoping Apple and Microsoft might go along. Instead of making these giant releases every couple, 3 years, you know, just put out the next new feature every couple of months.
Which is exactly what the Chromebook does. You get a new feature, it downloads and installs in the background, and then whenever you want. Yeah, might as well start with them if they want to. Might as well give it a shot. All right, our next caller is somewhere back here. I can't see it. There it is.
It's underneath.
Oh, it went underneath. Okay, there we go. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
I have an Asus laptop transformer type little computer
where
the back end comes off and you've got a tablet.
Yeah.
Okay, it's cool. However, I'm trying to install Kindle, and the screen just stays there. It says, this is Kindle for operating system 8, Windows 8. The computer, the laptop came with 8, but I changed it to 10, Windows 10.
Yeah, yeah.
And now Kindle won't install. It says, this is perfect for 8, it says.
Yep. Again, that's where we've told folks before going to Windows 10, to check a lot of the software.
See if they have a version for Windows 10 is the question.
Because a lot of them aren't there yet.
Okay, I'm not doing anything wrong. It's just the nature of the beast, huh?
You got it.
Well, I think there is a version for Windows 10.
But you got to go to that manufacturer and find it.
And it should be in the Microsoft Store.
Yeah, I see it says Windows 8 and 10.
Okay.
So what's happening with you is you're installing it and it's freezing.
Yes, it says pending. It said pending. It has said pending for the last 24 hours.
Oh, then it hasn't downloaded yet.
No.
Okay, that's probably not you. There was a glitch yesterday in their store.
Uh-huh.
And I stopped because I was trying to update a couple of things on my Windows 10 box. I stopped all of them, waited about an hour, started them all again, and they all came down.
Okay.
So it may be waiting for something that it will never get. If you stop it, again, then shut your machine down, wait a little bit, start it up again, try it again, it may install correctly this time.
Okay. Or it may be what this other gentleman said a minute ago, that the doesn't have a something or other.
Yeah, it seems to think it works on Windows. According to the site, according to Microsoft Store, it does work on 10. So my thought is that you're having the problem that I... You started this yesterday?
Yes, and it has said pending for the last 24 hours. I thought, well, I'll ask you guys.
Yeah, and that's about when I had the problem as well. It was different piece of software, but the same store.
Okay, so I will totally turn my computer off, wait an hour, try again.
You have to stop the download first.
Stop the download first.
Oh, right? How do I do that?
Go into the where it says and just say cancel. Go into where it says pending.
Right.
There should be an X there somewhere.
Oh, there is. Here it is. Oh,
there you
good.
Go.
X.
X marks the spot.
Now it's the pending turned into the word install.
There you go. That means it didn't do anything. So you can try installing without shutting down, but if it says pending for a while again, then shut it down.
It is saying working, and something is moving on the screen.
I think you're good. We got to go.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back for a whole nother hour of this nonsense. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, and you. It is Soundbites and the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We're streaming live, finally, on...
got the video up
on
now.
On YouTube. We're streaming live over the web at jazz901.org. That's audio only.
So if you were watching the YouTube stream, you may have to refresh your feed to get into the new one.
Right. I'm streaming live on Periscope. Nobody's watching. But if you go to Twitter and look for @NickFrancesco... you'll see the link to follow us on Periscope, and Dave's just kind of standing there. He's just happy as a clam.
Hey,
I don't know how happy
clams
are.
I'll let you guys do that. I mean, I've got enough.
You got more than enough to
stuff
do,
over here,
and we've got you on the cam.
Oh yeah, I know. But that's okay. I have a face for radio, and that's where it should be. It's just on the radio. Nothing blurring across the screens. You know, showing
right. We have nobody waiting on the line. So here comes another... I might as well stick with the Windows theme here.
Microsoft, you're on a roll.
I am on a roll. Microsoft has made it clear that it will take on a greater role in managing the Windows update process with Windows 10. The company has also made it clear that it will aggressively push users, both consumers and businesses, to upgrade from Windows 7 and Windows 8 to its latest OS. With that in mind, it's hard to imagine either predecessor... hanging around anywhere near as long as Windows XP. The decision to not only push updates out, but also to ensure that all Windows 10 devices receive them in a timely fashion, fits well with the concept of Windows as a service. The change may even go unnoticed by many consumers. IT departments, however, are keenly aware of the shift, and many aren't happy about it. Traditionally, Microsoft has given IT the final word on patches and updates. While most departments do roll out critical patches and major updates, they do so on their own time frame and only after significantly testing their specific environment. This ensures that an update does not break an app, a PC configuration, or cause other unforeseen issues. If an update is required that could introduce problems, IT can then develop a plan to address the issue in advance of deployment. Some updates might even be judged as unneeded and never get deployed. And so that's a problem that Microsoft is making for IT people. How do you feel about Microsoft deciding whether you should upgrade and when you should upgrade to Windows 10? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
See, that's the big problem in companies, is that a lot of businesses have written custom software, and you change the underlying OS, and suddenly your software doesn't work, which generally means they took lazy shortcuts, but right. That's what they do.
Right.
If the programmers were in charge, the program would never be finished, because there's always something more you can do to make it better.
Exactly.
Eventually, you have to just ship the darn thing.
At some point, that's going to have to happen. And that's the problem that we're seeing. Microsoft really wants everybody to upgrade to Windows 10 now. And the problem is that most IT businesses want to do things in a staged and sane manner, which is at odds with what Microsoft wants. So we'll see. As time goes on, we'll see, I guess. But it's back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. It was a great play.
It was a great play, wasn't it?
Yes. I just got yesterday a brand new Toshiba laptop. Came with Windows 10. And one of the things I'm trying to do is pin shortcuts to the taskbar.
Yeah.
And like my agent, I used to in Windows 7, I just brought my agent, ransacked down the taskbar. It was fine. In Windows 10, I get a circle with a bar through it, basically saying I can't pin.
Right. And the reason is that the taskbar is locked.
I didn't say locked.
So right-click on it, and you should be able to select. I don't have it in front of me, but you should be able to select unlock the taskbar. Otherwise, you have to do that from right-clicking on the little start symbol.
Yeah.
And go into the properties there and do it there. But, yes, you should be able to do it one of several ways because this is Windows 10. You should either be able to drag the tile right from or the name right from the list over to the taskbar.
Right.
Alternately, you should be able to right click on the tile or the name and say pin to taskbar.
Yeah, neither one of those work.
Then that's because the taskbar is locked.
Then in the bottom, I mean, I did look for a locked taskbar and it says it's unlocked. I mean, I have the option of locking it and then I get the option of unlocking it.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean,
it's where you drag it that's important as well.
Okay.
You want to drag it. Now, right now, there's that one little symbol. I won't tell you what it looks like to me. There's that one little symbol that's just it's essentially a little TV with wings.
Okay, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's, you want to drag it to right next to that. I mean, right next to it. And you should see a little red line appear, which is where it would drop, and it should let you drop it there.
And it does not.
Steve, it's acting like it's locked.
Yeah, and yet I've dragged a number of other things to it. I've dragged, you know, shortcuts to sound bites. I've dragged, Chrome and...
Is it full?
No, I've got another inch and a quarter, inch and a half.
Maybe not. It depends. The other thing to do is try right-clicking on the thing and see if it still has a pinned taskbar, and if that will work. If that's grayed out, it is because the taskbar is now full.
Well, I just, I just pulled it up to make it two lines instead of one. That doesn't work.
No. Like I said, right-click on a tile or a name and see if pinned to taskbar is grayed out.
Okay. No, unpin, resize, nope.
Well, if, it's, well, if it says unpin,
then it is pinned.
Well, then it's already pinned. Try one that's not pinned.
I clicked on a tile that was already pinned, that's all.
Right, right, right. That's what I'm saying. Click on one that's not pinned.
Okay. Got to find one that's not pinned.
Well, and like I said, if you've got a dozen or so on there, it may well be...
I don't. I mean, I was looking at... you're talking about going to that screen with all the tiles.
Yeah, and just right-click on one of those. You know, you can always unpin it later. So right-click on any tile that's not already on the taskbar and see if a pinned to taskbar is grayed out. All right,
no, pin the taskbar is not grayed out.
Then... select it, see if it shows up on the taskbar.
And it did.
There you go. Then that's the way you can do it.
Okay, but I don't have... When I right-click on, like, the Agent Ransack shortcut, pin the taskbar is not one of the options.
You probably can't pin a shortcut. You have to pin the actual app.
Yeah, I don't know that you can pin a shortcut to the taskbar. I have never tried that.
Okay.
You could certainly leave a task. You can leave a shortcut on the desktop.
Right.
But I don't think you can put it on the taskbar.
Okay. So I will take a look at that.
Yep. All right, find the actual app and then try pinning that.
All right. Steve, what'd you say?
Find the actual app, not the shortcut, and try pinning that.
Okay. I will take a look at that. Yep. I haven't done that. I think I've pinned shortcuts before, but that's a different operating system.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Yep. You got to forget all those little tricks you used to know because they might be different, and probably are.
They probably are different. Windows 10 is a different beast, which is why some people are saying, since I've got to essentially learn a new operating system anyway, I could do it a Mac, I could do Linux, I could do a Chromebook, because I have to learn a new operating system anyway. It may look similar, but it's really not. But again, we're afraid to try new things.
Well, and we hear that a lot in our store. You know, people are resisting switching from Windows to Mac because it's different. Well, and we say, well, it's the same thing switching from Windows 7 to Windows 10. It's different. It's going to be different. You're going to have to learn something new.
Right.
And that's why so many people are still running XP.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. But they're going to have to learn it anyway. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's laziness. But it certainly doesn't matter anymore. You're going to have to do it one way or another. All right, next caller is Tom from Brockport, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Hey, I had some comments on the Windows 10 situation.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is, like, this is going to be so revolutionary because they're just going to push it to businesses, everything?
Yes, everything.
Yep.
Yep.
So all the servers have to be upgraded. What's the penetration right now? What's the Windows 7, 8 server, any across-the-board penetration, do you know?
Off the top of my head, I do not know.
But that's one of the legitimate reasons that... Microsoft wants to do this because there's a lot of old servers sitting in closets. There's a lot of people still running XP, and that's where a lot of those viruses are still running around. And it's easier for developers to write to the current OS than to try to have to make backward compatibility to backward OSs.
Right.
So they have some legitimate reasons to do this, but it's really bad, I think, pushing it on especially businesses that don't want it yet. They have to test their own apps for it.
Yeah, they can't have it at that point.
Yeah.
You know, they would be all forced to go out and buy maybe new equipment.
Right.
You know, for some businesses, that's terrible.
You know, yeah. But the thing is, you know, Mac and obviously, Chrome have been doing, you know, this automatic thing for years, but they just don't have the penetration that Windows does.
According to net market share, Windows XP has 11% of the market.
Okay.
Windows 7 is 55%.
Okay.
Windows 8 is 10%. Windows 10 is 8%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Windows 8 is 2%.
And that's exactly the reason we're talking about. IT departments really love the idea of moving to a free operating system. They love that.
Right. Oh, that, sure.
But they want to make sure that the thing runs with all of their software. Now,
Windows NT still has a 0.1% market share.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
But that, and that's just it.
I used to get calls for 98 sometimes at AOL, by the way.
Right. And that's part of the issue. Once something is running right, IT people are reluctant to screw around with it.
Yeah. whether it be the public or the corporate organization. Yeah.
Right. And we get that. Windows XP, of course, should never be run anymore because it's just so riddled with... But 7 is still viable for a lot of people, and they are reluctant to move to 10. But we have to.
That would mean I would have to get rid of my or replace my ThinkPad completely because it would just. I have a ThinkPad that's just running 7.
Right, and that's the other issue is that for individuals, there are lots and lots of machines out there that just cannot run 10 efficiently.
Or can't run 10 at all.
Right.
Or too old.
Right. So what happens with you folks? Well, Microsoft response, of course, because they're all multimillionaires to begin with, just buy another computer. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Right?
And
I mean, that's...
While I've just, spent several $100s with the setup I have, and I'm fine with that.
Although what is nice is the market pressure has been driving PC prices down over the years, and now we see Chromebooks starting at $199, tablets for $49.
And I will tell you this about the Chromebook. I have a CR48, which was the reference model Google put out before there were any Chromebooks.
Okay.
And it upgraded to the absolute latest version.
Yeah.
So Microsoft, at least, is supporting everything that's ever come out. Listen, we got to take a break.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Thanks.
I have one question more.
Okay. Hang on. We'll get to you in just a couple of minutes. But in the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Tom from Brockport, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I shut down the Periscope thing because, A, nobody was watching, and, B, it had drained my battery on my phone. But I just noticed that there's a Chrome app that may just be a viewer. Of course, not a thing, but we'll take a look at that during the next break. But in the meantime, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
We still have the caller on the line.
We still have Tom from Brockport on the line. Go ahead, Tom. What's your other question?
Hi, real quick, actually, I've heard you guys mention Chromebooks a lot.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I have not really researched enough to understand exactly how data storage works.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does it depend on the model? Does it depend?
Chromebooks in general. So the models all work the same way.
But like other laptops, there's RAM and storage options in each model.
Right.
Okay. So you can go probably as low as like a 16 gigabyte drive.
Right. Most of them have 16 gig drives. The basic premise here is that most of your storage will be on the web.
Okay.
So if you, for example, you don't usually take pictures with a Chromebook, but if you did, it would be stored in the web. Anything you write, you would write through Google Drive and using Docs or Sheets or Slides, and then that would also be stored on the web.
And word processing files are so tiny, they hardly take up any space.
And in fact, if you write, you get, I think it's 15 gigs free, But anything you write in Google Docs or Sheets or slides doesn't count against that storage.
Okay. Now, if you have iPhones and you want to be able to use iTunes, I am almost certain because it's basically an Android type product. It's a Google product. You're not going to be able to do anything with your iPhone.
No, it doesn't talk to Chromebooks at all. iTunes doesn't.
Okay. So you would install the Google Music app on your phone or your Mac and upload your music to Google.
Right. But let's say this is your only computer.
Right. No, if you have if you have iTunes and you want all that music on your laptop and et cetera,
or at least just to be able to manage your phone and all that.
Right. No, unfortunately, that is the one thing Chromebooks cannot do. Apple has not seen fit to put iTunes up for,
they're Chromebooks. Competing.
So, no, you cannot do that.
It's also similar if you had a Windows phone. All the OSs work best with themselves. And if you have one OS on your tablet and one OS on your phone, they're hard to work together. There are workarounds and there are ways to do it. You can get the Google Drive app for iOS and put your music on your Google Drive. So from iTunes on your device, you can put it on your Google Drive.
You can also move your iTunes collection to Google Play Music.
Right, to Google Play.
But that doesn't help him manage his phone.
Right.
Well, you manage your phone on the phone or with the iCloud website.
Right.
Right.
That would be a workaround. All right.
Yep.
Right. So basically, we've mentioned this before. If you want to use iTunes, then a Chromebook really is not your thing. If you want to use Skype, you cannot, but you can use Hangouts, Google Hangouts, which is
same
sort of app. Spotify, Photoshop. Spotify is, in fact, completely supported on Chromebooks. Photoshop doesn't work. There is a built-in photo editor that lets you do basic edits. And, of course, you can find stuff like Pixlr and Sumo Paint on the web. Keynote doesn't work, but you can store the actual application in iWork for Cloud. iWork for iCloud, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And so that'll work. So, no, there's a lot of stuff that isn't exactly right.
Yeah.
But it does all the same stuff, and you can translate between them. It's just a little more work.
Right.
So buying a refurbished PC with 7.
Well, that's going to be upgraded to 10, so make sure you get a PC that will easily run 10. Right?
Well, let's just say this is just something to bridge.
Well, you'll get a lot of nagging demands, but if you're willing to live with those, then certainly.
Right. Yeah. Got you there. Okay. Well, I appreciate the advice and answering my questions.
So, all right. Thanks.
Have a great afternoon.
You too.
And one of the advantages of the Chromebook being so inexpensive is that it isn't that hard to replace every year with the next model. You know, $200 for a Chromebook.
Right.
That's $10 a month.
Right. So if you replace one every 2 years.
Yeah. Now phones is doing the same thing. The 2 year contracts are pretty much gone now with cell phones. So now they're doing $50 a month to pay for your phone.
Right.
Which is a 2 year contract.
Yeah.
But it's not a contract. Right. It's a payment payoff. Yeah.
Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Cheek.
Tawaga, New York.
There we go. What's up?
I topics in order that you brought them up. The one thing that I like about Flash is the HTML5 player on YouTube for me is horrible.
Really?
You look at the progress bar. Where you are in the video is this tiny little dot. both the left and the right sides of that are the same color, whereas in Flash you can see, oh, red is what I've watched. The progress marker is a nice big dot. What's buffered is light gray, and what's undownloaded or whatever is dark gray or black. Like, that's wonderful. I really like the way that looks. The HTML5 player I don't care for at all, and that's really the one thing I do use Flash for. He also had the caller calling in about his SSDs and was worried about filling it more than half full. Really, the erasure and writing and all that is handled automatically by the controller.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. Yeah.
And one of the reasons it's handled by the controller is, as you mentioned, using the thing wears it out. So the controller actually keeps track of where it has been written and tries to use the cells equally. It says, okay, use block 1, then 2, then 3, then 4, then 5. Doesn't matter what block number you tell it to write, it's going to use them in its order, not the order that you tell it.
Right.
And there is a specific command for these things. Tell it to trim off the blocks that I know I'm no longer using. So what the drive can do is pre-erase some blocks that you told it, oh, I'm not using that anymore. Go ahead, you know, have your way with it. And then you can write to it much later.
Right.
That's a really nice feature.
Now, I also, give me a half a second here. Let me go back to Flash.
Yes, sir.
I'm clearly using only the HTML5 viewer because I'm on a Chromebook. And I'm seeing that red line.
Yes. It's one continuous red line from the right to the left, or left to the right, isn't it?
No, it's I am seeing a gray line from across the bottom. And inside that gray line is the white line that tells me how much is loaded and the red line that tells me how much has been seen.
I wonder if it has anything to do with it specifically being on Firefox.
That may be. Try it under Chrome. See what you get.
Didn't I remember reading that Firefox is starting to build in Flash itself, like Chrome does?
Maybe.
They were going to start doing that eventually?
Maybe.
Which is interesting because they should start phasing it out.
Yeah, but I definitely am not using Flash on this Chromebook. Trust me on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Using the Pepper version or whatever they call it, yeah.
No, I'm using HTML5. I've specifically told it I don't want any Flash anything.
Oh, you can shut that off in Chrome. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, didn't know that. Interesting.
Well, there's an add-on. There's an extension.
Oh, nifty.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I do use Chrome for is I hate downloading PDFs and then looking at them separately. So what I'll do is I'll copy the URL from the URL bar and paste it into Chrome and then read the PDF document within Chrome itself.
Right.
Plus there's a lot of other little handy features. Firefox, though, is my main browser. The other thing about flash drives, though, is you look at the capacity on them. You have to just be really careful about how your operating system counts that capacity and how the manufacturer counts the capacity. I've seen several manuals that make it really clear. Oh, one gigabyte equals 1 billion bytes.
Right.
And, of course, everything works in powers of two on the computer, so if your OS is counting in powers of two, it's going to read less.
And that's
then on top
most
of that, the file system itself needs some space to keep track of what's in use
right.
and what's not in use, and most likely your formatting utilities and all that are going to report the capacity that can actually be used for files, and it won't tell you about the amount that it needs to keep track of everything.
Yeah, and a lot of the boxes and advertising will always have that little asterisk, and quite often down at the bottom it will say, you know, 1 gigabyte is 1 billion bytes rather than
right.
2 to the 10th.
Here's the thing marketing has been doing this for a very, very long
monitors,
time.
Monitors. Remember the viewable image size and CRT monitors
right.
was a big thing then.
What marketing does is uses not megabytes, M-E-G-A, but mibibytes, M-I-B-I. A mibibyte is a thousand.
EFI means binary. Yeah, you bet.
Right. So it uses that as 1,000 or 1 million or 1 billion, as opposed to 1024 or 1024
squared.
Yeah. So that's the big difference. And somewhere it will either say a gigabyte is a billion bytes, or it will say, you know, it's one G lowercase I lowercase or uppercase B, which is gibibyte, not gigabyte.
Yes, and that'd be the power of 1024.
Right, yeah. Right. Gigabyte is 1024. Gigabyte is 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And here's something for the security and privacy conscious. Those guys at Microsoft, they need to go back to school and learn what unlimited means. My goodness, yes, you're going to have people uploading the entire contents of their DVR. Now, here's my good question. How do they know it's the contents of a DVR? It seems to me they're peeking inside that stuff to see what it is.
Oh, theoretically.
They never said it was encrypted, did they?
Yeah. Right.
They theoretically, they did it by size. So if you load 640 meg of something, you've uploaded a CD. If you upload 3 gig, you've uploaded a small DVD. Right.
You know, also, preferably, I wouldn't even want them to know the file names. You know, they probably want to. They probably looked and say, "Oh, .mp4." Yeah, that's probably a video file.
Right. Well, storage on the cloud has always come down to who do you trust.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you this much. I've taken to taking my most critical files, putting them in a tar archive, and then encrypting them, and then uploading them to Google.
Pre-internet encryption.
Right.
Absolutely, because like I have like my tax forms, all those filled-in PDFs that I have from the state and federal.
Right.
It's like, yeah, Social Security number in there. What if Google gets compromised somehow?
That's right.
They're not. Whoever does that, they're not going to be able to find out my Social Security number because, gosh, they don't know the key it was encrypted with.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you make it a large key like 2048, then you're going to have they're going to have a much harder time brute forcing it.
Oh yes, good. Yeah, really good. Well, the thing is, the keys I use, I generated in 2000. I don't think they generated like 2048-bit keys back then.
No, they
it's
didn't.
Pretty good, but, well, thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right, thank you, Joe. Keep smiling.
I remember one of the music services, I forget which one it was, were trying to save disk space, basically, by, you know, there's a popular song, and probably a million people have that song, so we're going to save it once on our servers. And the music industry said, no, you can't do that. That's a violation of the license. You have to save a million copies of it, because each person has their own licensed copy. And it just seems ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But some lawyer somewhere said, you know, if they do it the other way, we've created a loophole.
Yeah. What's that book about the aliens and copyright violation?
I don't know.
Zero Day.
All right. Our next, and while Steve looks up his book, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Hi. Love your show, guys.
Thank you.
Well, after OS software updates have made my two machines, my laptop and my desktop, irrelevant except for surfing on the web and other minor sundry things, and also eventually what's going to happen to my Windows 7 laptop, the light finally came on for me. As far as a Chromebook, that's probably the way that I think everything, it seems to me, everything is going to go probably for everybody once the light goes on for everybody else, too, that things are going to become, all the money they spent for hardware is going to be for naught down the line because the upgrades in software are going to make make that hardware irrelevant someday.
I completely agree. Listen, hold on, please. We have to take a break right now. But stay on the line. We'll come right back to you in just a couple of seconds with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
You two are bad. I'm Dave Enroy.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 46 minutes after the hour, we have Steve from Rochester, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve.
Howdy.
You still there? Excellent.
Yes, I am. Thanks.
Excellent. So you've seen the light about Chromebooks.
Absolutely. I mean, the money that I'd have to throw at these machines to upgrade them to accommodate the software upgrades, it's cost prohibitive. It doesn't make any sense. I could probably buy 3 or 4 Chromebooks for what it would cost to upgrade these machines.
Yep.
And even then, they wouldn't be where the technology is today in the newer type machines. So it just seems to me it makes more sense. The Chromebook seems to make a heck of a lot more sense, and even security wise and storage and all the other things that follow behind the hardware becoming outdated. I mean,
yep.
It's just not making any sense anymore.
You are absolutely right. One of the things that people tend to forget is that cost of upgrade. We've had people call us and say, just even today, I think I'm going to go on for Windows 10 on my machine. And I always say, make sure you've got enough RAM, make sure the drive is fast, the processor is fast. And if you're going to do that sort of upgrade, does it make more sense to look at a whole new machine, a Chromebook, or to do that upgrade? Now, not just for you, Steve, but for everybody listening, if you've been thinking about a Chromebook, the way to tell whether or not a Chromebook is useful to you is to download the Chrome browser and see if you can do everything through it. So when you have to write something, you go onto Google Drive. When you want to see pictures, you use Google Photo, photo.google.com, photos. It doesn't matter. Google Photos.
Right. Right.
And et cetera, et cetera. And you can find lots of extensions that do things. You can find lots of other stuff that does things. And if you do all of those and you can last for, say, a week or a month, however long it takes you to be comfortable with it, just living out of the Chrome browser, then why not buy a Chromebook? Save yourself a lot of money and headache and heartache.
Right. Is it true that the Chromebooks run on Wi-Fi only?
Not necessarily. You can buy models that do. For example, one of the models I have, I get 200 meg free a month from T-Mobile, and it seems to still be continuing, and it really shouldn't anymore. But okay, and that's certainly enough to do. Most mail or whatever. But what I find is that I rarely am any place that I haven't got Wi-Fi anymore.
It's just all over the place.
Yeah, probably not. Some the stuff's all over the place.
I mean Wi-Fi.
The big thing is, for example, if you are a Time Warner customer, Time Warner has Passport all over the place. So if you're using their internet, then you have access to thousands of hotspots all over the city. Almost never go anywhere that doesn't have some Wi-Fi in it. In fact, I've stopped going places that don't have Wi-Fi. Hint, hint, hint.
And even if you don't have internet access, the Chromebook still works.
Yep.
It just it won't synchronize back to the cloud until you get back to the internet.
Right. So I do a lot of writing, and that writing, if I'm somewhere that there is no internet connection, one of the things I can do before I go is say sync the cloud. So it syncs my data my book or my, you know, whatever I'm writing, my column, down to my Chromebook, I can then go anywhere I want, go sit on a beach somewhere, write a bunch of stuff. I can write for an entire day. It gets saved to my hard drive. The minute I'm back and open my machine in a place where I have Wi-Fi, it synchronizes.
Wow.
Automatically.
That's great. Yeah.
Automatically. So the only time I don't have an extra copy of it, right, is that transition time.
Yeah. Well, I'm sold. I looked at a Toshiba, too, that looked like a pretty nice machine.
The Toshiba 2 is one of the two best Chromebooks I have seen lately.
Great screen on it, and there was enough of everything on it for my use anyway.
Yep.
And so I'm a convert.
Good for you. I love to hear that.
That's right.
Keep us informed of how much you like it.
And
I will.
That's kind of one of the issues.
Thank you.
It's similar to the, you know, Mac versus Windows. People don't realize there's other OSs.
Mm-hmm.
And in the phone, you've got iPhone versus Android. Well, there's BlackBerry and Windows Phone, too. But the two big ones and then the other ones that no one knows about. So we can help people know about
there's
those
the
other ones.
There's two choices and all the others.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's just like the browsers and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's out there. But
I almost never take a regular laptop with me anymore when I go somewhere. I'm always carrying only the Chromebook. And that, you know, the other thing, of course, is depending on where I'm going, am I either bringing my $400 Chromebook, which I actually bought, or my $200 Chromebook, which I had been given many years ago. And if I lose a $200 Chromebook,
oh, no big deal.
It was given to me, so it's my $0 Chromebook, right?
Yep.
And so if something happens to it, I haven't lost anything. And if I actually had to buy a new Chromebook, if I lose a Chromebook, here's what I lose: the time it takes me to go buy it, the money it takes me to go buy it, and the time it takes me to change my Google password.
Mm-hmm.
Once I have done that, that other machine is just a brick.
Yeah.
And the new machine, oh, by the way,
it's faster, more memory.
More memory. And once I log in with the same username that I had in Google before,
boom,
it downloads all my apps. So 5 minutes after I start the thing, it looks exactly like the one I lost.
Yep.
Boom. Done.
Well, see, that's the other nice thing, though. And I think, you know, going back, remember with phones and that, trying to move pictures and all that other stuff, it was a pain in the butt. Your contacts and all, you had to put everything back in. Well, with Google now setting everything up, and you go on with your Gmail account, all your photos, all your contacts, all your text, everything could just be automatically upgrade on the cloud.
Yep.
So now if you lose your phone, as I was explaining to Kathy, you lose your phone, no big deal.
Right.
You just get the new phone, you sign into Google and say, download all this stuff.
Yep.
And it'll do your contacts, your emails, your photos, all your old text.
Yep.
And it's there.
Yep. It's all there. It's all waiting for you. It's all nice and easy. And the beauty.
And you don't have to do anything. It does it in the background.
Right. Right. And the Chromebook is generally lighter than any laptop I've ever carried.
Mm-hmm.
The screen my problem is that $200 Chromebook is an 11-inch Chromebook.
Yeah.
And my eyes just don't do 11 inches anymore.
That's why I've been touting for the past, month now, that's why I think I'm going to go, I'm seriously thinking of just disconnecting my Windows 7 machine from the internet. And I'll do what I normally do on that, and then you hook up the Chromebook to the internet.
Yep.
No big deal. It's Wi-Fi, and I'm safe.
Right.
I don't ever have to worry about the other machine getting messed up because of this creeping in or that or this or that. No, I don't need it.
Yep. And it's just much easier for everybody. Also, you can buy Chrome boxes, by the way, which are a little hockey puck-looking thing that you hook up to your own giant monitor and keyboard and mouse it's a Chromebook in a box, so
desktop,
it's essentially
computer.
A desktop. Yeah,
yep.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I even on my desktop nowadays, I only ever use Google Docs for writing. I only ever use Sheets and stuff, so it becomes much easier. Listen, we're we're going to take another quick break, but we will be back.
This is
no, no way. That quick break will last 166 hours.
Although, this coming Wednesday is the Apple Cider Users Group meeting, and we're going to have the Nick Francesco, Jerry Seward Internet Tag Team Championship.
Are we? This Wednesday?
That's this Wednesday. You agreed to it, really?
I probably did.
So I wanted to remind you, it's this Wednesday.
My calendar will tell me that in just a moment.
Wednesday, November 11th, 7 p.m. at the Irondequoit United Church of Christ, Titus Avenue, across from the House of Guitars.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly what it says right here. Very nice. That'll be fun. All right. We're done for another week. Here comes George with the best German music you'll hear all week. Here comes Michael. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.